Folks, I need to correct something I said yesterday, and I'm glad it's Friday today. And I'm glad I didn't make that mistake on Friday so that the weekend would have to come in between my mistake and my correction. That would have ruined my weekend because, folks, I don't want to mislead you or give you bad information. I'm doing the best I can here. I do sometimes make mistakes, and I love to correct my mistakes. It's easy to correct my mistakes. I like the opportunity to correct mistakes because it happens so infrequently. So the mistake was saying that those who, that this was speaking strictly of those in the proximity of Babylon, seeing as how that was the context of this warning. But if we read it more carefully, I thought I had read it carefully, apparently not. It says in verse 9, if anyone is worshiping the wild beast. Now, it's true, Babylon came right before that. Babylon the Great has made all nations drink of the furious wine of her prostitution. And then it goes right into the third messenger, if anyone is worshiping the wild beast. But I want to emphasize this word anyone now. If anyone is worshiping the wild beast. And I was thrown off here too by the word saints in verse 12. Here is the endurance of the saints who are keeping the precepts of God and the faith of Jesus. Now, we also are saints, but we're not Israel saints. We are not the saints of this context. It's those saints who are alive at the time of indignation. And it could be even Israel. I'm going to broaden this even more. I'm not only going to correct my mistake, but I'm going to preempt the making of another mistake. The saints here are probably Israelite saints, but I don't throw out the possibility, I think probability, that they're also proselytes of Israel. As I told you, the vast throng consists of many people who are sympathetic to Israel, as opposed to the 144,000. I mean, not that they're not sympathetic to Israel, but the 144,000 are definitely named, and they're said to be Israelites. And they come from all 12 tribes, but the vast throng does not. And so the saints are not necessarily Israelites, but they are those who are keeping the precepts of God, verse 12. Now, you and I, we don't have to worry about keeping the precepts of God. For one thing, the precepts of God never came to us. But those foolish people who became proselytes of Israel, they made themselves, I don't know why anyone would want to do this. Oh, well, it was the only game in town. That's why. Before Paul's gospel, it was the only game in town. I don't know why anybody would want to associate themselves with Israel after Paul's gospel, because here we have a gospel that's law and condemnation free. Why wouldn't you embrace that evangel? I don't know. Because you're panting for Israel things. Whatever the reason, you live by Israel, you'll die by Israel. So you have to keep the precepts of God and the faith of Jesus. And if you don't, there's going to be trouble. It's so interesting here that Christians want to make this a description of eternal torment. They do that with the rich man and Lazarus as well. They love to find eternal torment wherever they can. And they use creative means to do it, twisting passages that are not referring at all to eternal torment and trying to make them speak of eternal torment. Of course, rich man and Lazarus is a parable told by Jesus in order to make the Pharisees, the priestly class, realize how degrading they were behaving toward sinners, how they looked down their long Jewish noses at other people. Christians say, of course, the whole thing's a parable. As soon as you have the rich man and Lazarus conversing in Hades, in fire, mind you, flames engulfing them, and they're having a nice conversation. Crackle, crackle, so, I say, crackle, crackle, smoke, smoke. How are you feeling today, right? Yeah, not too good, okay. So, absolutely ridiculous. And of course, the salvation of the context is based upon one having wealth, one having little, one having good things in life, one having sores, And so not a word about the faith of Christ. Likewise here, in this warning to those who, to anyone worshiping the wild beast. So to emphasize my correction here, it's anyone on the world worshiping, anyone who's worshiping the wild beast, which will be every Christian on the planet will be worshiping the wild beasts. So here's the ironic thing. Aren't the Christians lucky that they're completely wrong that this verse refers to eternal torment? That they will be drinking the wine of God's fury, which has been blended undiluted in the cup of his indignation, and they will be tormented in fire and sulfur before the holy messengers and before the lampkin, and the fumes of their torment are ascending for the eons of the eons. Good thing for the Christians that they're completely wrong about this, because they are going to be the ones worshiping the wild beast and taking its image, the happy little cross. So I got good news for you, Christians. You're completely wrong about this. You're completely wrong. Why is that good? Because if you are correct, then you would be the ones being eternally tormented. As it is, you're only going to be tormented for a short period of time, and I will prove that the torment is only for a short period of time, and it's in the sight of who? In the sight of who? The lampkin, before the holy messengers and before the lampkin. This is also good news for you, and this is where you're wrong again, because the fact that the lampkin, look at the word here. How do we have the word torment next to the word lampkin? Tormented in fire and sulfur before the holy messengers and before the lampkin, which is a baby lamb. Look at that torment. Is that what a baby lamb says? I don't know. I'm not the farming type. But the lampkin is the one who saved all humanity at the cross. And the nice thing about this, I mean, you have to look for silver linings here, is that the lampkin is supervising it. It's not as though a fire is being lit and the perp is running away and the lampkin is taking off. I'll be back in an eon, maybe. No, this is supervised torment. So the Christians are wrong about that too, which once again is going to bode well for them because they are the objects of this judgment. Christians will be the objects of this judgment of the unveiling, chapter 14, verses 9 through 12. They are not the saints who are keeping the precepts of God and the faith of Jesus. They don't know Jesus. Remember, there has to be a vast group of people to whom it is said, "Depart from me, workers of lawlessness, I never knew you." On the heels of the assumption of those workers of lawlessness that they had done wonderful works in the name of the Lord, and they had done amazing miracles in the name of the Lord. And it will be shown that they didn't do it in the name of the true Lord, but in the name of the false Lord, the one that Paul calls a different Jesus in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. There's a different Jesus that is a tormenting Jesus, that is a Jesus who lights the fire and leaves, that is a Jesus who indiscriminately torments for eternity people who sinned to different degrees. How is it that everybody's going to be burned in hell forever, sinners who didn't choose Jesus Christ? And admittedly, the Christians will admit that. Yes, there are some good people there. How many times will they tell you? Doesn't matter how good you are. Doesn't matter how many times you've been to church. Doesn't matter your good deeds. If you don't accept Jesus as your Messiah, you're going to be tormented. Okay, so a good person who otherwise did fine things, raised a good family, ran an honest business, was benevolent, gave to the poor, wrapped nice Christmas presents for the family, well, they're still going to be tormented for eternity in flames. Sorry about your luck, because they didn't believe in Jesus. So these nice people are going to be tormented with Adolf Hitler, who the Christians, obviously, Hitler's going to be tormented for eternity. So indiscriminate. Whereas this verse is very discriminate, very detailed, very precise. This is why you're going to see this next week. It is a joy to be a literalist. It is a joy to take the Bible scriptures literally, allowing, of course, for figures of speech, which makes it another joy to understand figures of speech. The smoke of their torment? Torment doesn't smoke. Does torment smoke? Oh, it's a figure of speech. Yeah, it's a figure of speech for what? Well, I'm going to tell you probably Monday. Because that's what I do. So, two things have happened here. This dire warning has been stripped out of its context, and it's been taken out of the declared time period. Of course, eons of the eons is still a long time, but it's not eternity. And we know that King James, somebody asked me the other day, do you read the King James Bible? And it was very ominously stated. It's like, if you answer no, Zender, then you're an apostate. And my answer, I didn't think of this at the time because I was trying to be nice, because some of you may not realize this, that when I'm in person, I'm very nice. It's when I write, I make strong statements. I would have said, sir, why would I use a version of the scripture that has been convicted of containing over 20,000 translating errors? But I didn't say that. I just said, well, I read a literal version of the Bible that consistently translates each Greek word with its own English equivalent and then doesn't use that English word for any other Greek word. Which I thought was a decent way to say it. So faith, the beautiful thing about faith is not half-witted. Faith is keen, intelligent, it's discriminating, it's believing. And so if you have faith, it doesn't mean that you just believe whatever anybody tells you. No, it means that God, that you're still a person who enjoys logic, who enjoys intelligence, who enjoys being keen, who enjoys looking at things and understanding them correctly. God honors you by giving you exactly what you're looking for. This passage, as hard as it seems, is keen. It's intelligent. It's discriminating, and it's logical. I'm happy to tell you. So the first problem, I'm going to state the problem. You can mull over this over the weekend. Don't vex yourself too hard, because I'll make it all plain and simple to you on Monday. But there's this implication, apart from the context, that is that all who worship the wild beast will be tormented for the eons of the eons. That's what this seems to say. If you read this passage, you come away thinking, well, anyone who worships the wild beast will be tormented for the eons of the eons. But that's not what it says. It's kind of like that verse in Paul, where Paul says, it's about death. That verse that always gets misunderstood about death. What happened? I heard a beep. Am I being watched here? Oh, I missed a FaceTime audio call, according to that. So what's that verse in Paul? Somebody help me here. It's about death. It's not to live is Christ, to die is gain. No, is to be alive, to die is to be alive with Christ. I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time thinking of that passage. But it's commonly assumed that the verse teaches that death is life, where in fact death is the opposite of life. I'll look up that verse for you too on Monday. But here's one of those passages where if you read it, it doesn't say that they're being tormented for the eons of the eons. That's what the fast reader, the careless reader, will come to that conclusion, but it says that he will be tormented in fire and sulfur before the holy messengers and before the lambkin. That is, anyone worshiping the wild beast and having the image on the hand or the forehead. And the fumes of their torment is what is ascending for the eons of the eons, the fumes of the torment. But if you read that quickly, you close the book and say, well, they're tormented forever and ever. So even in the King James, they're not tormented forever and ever. Not even in the King James Version. They're tormented in the sight of the messengers and the holy lampkin. But it's the fumes of the torment that ascend forever and ever in the King James Version. But in the Concordant Version, not even that, for the eons of the eons. So not only are they not tormented forever and ever, but the fumes of their torment, which I'm going to explain to you next week, they don't even rise. The fumes, the smoke doesn't even ascend for ever and ever. It's only for the eons of the eons. Boy, I'm still trying to get that death verse. I got like 30 seconds and I could come up with it. The death verse. I got a mental block against it. How much time I got? 20 seconds. I'm going to go, as soon as I turn this thing off, I'm going to come up with that verse. Okay, now the pressure is simply too great, so I simply must bid you adieu for now. As soon as I turn off the microphone, I will come up with that verse, and I will regale you with it on Monday. I hope that you're with me then. Thank you.